This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sarah Mahmood. I'm the fellow over at UCSF with the Limb Preservation Center. So we have a case that we did not too long ago that we wanted to talk about a little bit today. So this gentleman is an 82-year-old male with a history of hypertension, hyperlipidemia, COPD, RA, came in with this foot ulcer on his left foot for about 1 month or so is the history. He was at an outside hospital, had some vascular intervention there, including a balloon angioplasty of the left SFA, popliteal, and PT arteries with a reported single vessel runoff to the foot. So first off, the question is, should we even try to salvage this foot given the extensive tissue damage and ulceration down to at least the level of tendon that we can pretty surely say? So I guess I would pose this question to the panel and see your thoughts.
So Sarah, how active is this guy? Does he walk?
So he walked in. He uses a walker. He lives with his wife in Sonora, California. He's retired. He generally, you know, ambulates pretty well on a daily basis for his activities of daily living. He's not very, like, active as far as exercise, but he's pretty functional, independent as far as all his daily activities of living, yeah.
So I would say that it doesn't seem that the tissue loss is that extreme, and you have a complete intact plantar surface, so it seems like a very salvageable foot. So, yeah, we would probably put a lot of effort into it.
Okay. All right, moving on. So as far as his exam is concerned, his vascular pulse exam, he had a palpable, on the left affected side, femoral pulse, popliteal pulse, and then he had no DP palpable or audible on Doppler and a monophasic PT pulse. And then his non-invasive studies showed a toe pressure on the left of 30 with the ABI of 0.6 with a pretty flat wave form right there. And then as far as Wi-Fi staging, which we normally always do with 99.9% of our patients in case it, for some reason, it doesn't apply. But the wound was a class 3 because it was down to tissue, tendon bone. Ischemia, a toe pressure of 30 or less counts as stage 3. And then infection, it wasn't, there wasn't any purulence per se, but there's a little bit of periwound erythema, which would go to a class 1, which would be stage 4. So I'm pretty sure most of you guys are aware of this staging system, but just to review. So this is the Wi-Fi staging system that, again, we use pretty regularly over at UCSF, and it classifies the wound's extent and depth, the ischemia, the perfusion and flow to the foot, and then presence and extent of any foot infection. And then based on that, we do a risk stratification of whether this patient will go on to more proximal amputation, the staging of it. And based on our data, we can see that in 1 year, approximately 50% of patients that are stage 4, which a lot of majority of patients are that come into the hospital, they're usually pretty advanced, would go on to a more proximal amputation, may that be a BK or AK. So again, I guess just looking at the additional examination findings and additional information we have, again, would you guys say to proceed with some kind of vascular intervention versus wound debridement versus both versus, you know, just...
It doesn't look to me like the patient has a rip-roaring infection that needs to be drained or extensively debrided prior to some vascular intervention, unless I missed something earlier. But certainly this guy needs an angiogram for further evaluation. He has, at least based on his clinical exam and his non-invasive studies, some pretty significant infrapopliteal disease. So I would go next to an angiogram. How long ago was his prior endovascular intervention? I mean, this guy could potentially be a candidate for the best CLI study, depending on how recent his prior intervention was.
So it was about 2 months. to when he presented to us, I believe.
Vincent Woody.
Do you know what it was that he had done?
Yes, he had a SFA, popliteal, and PT balloon angioplasty.
With plain old balloon angioplasty?
I believe so, but I don't have the report because it was from a different hospital. This is what was reported. No, I don't have the images from before, no.
So, I mean, to me, this foot just seems as if though it was probably much more ischemic, and you are seeing some, you know, so it just shows as if it is progressing positively. I mean, the fact that I always tell the when the patients come back and they have their all these old skin starts sloughing off, and then you have these kind of pink areas, I tell them that that's their baby skin coming back. And they get really happy. But it is true. When you see a chronically ischemic and profoundly ischemic leg and you do something, you have a lot of this where the wound will demarcate, it will contract, and then you have normal wound around it. You know, I'm not super convinced that this patient needs a extensive vascular workup at this point. Yeah, is it marginally perfuse? Yeah. But I don't know that I would consider being that aggressive. Maybe potentially the Breeman and see where you go from there would be a consideration.
Anyone else have any thoughts?
No? Okay. How did this guy represent to us? I mean, did he show up in our ER or did he come to the clinic?
He came in clinic, yeah. He walked into clinic. I think he was referred by a wound care center and a local
worker. And he was referred because his wound wasn't healing?
Yes.
I would say the debridement is, you know, the logical next step. The question is how deep and what's under that eschar. And now you're going to expose tendon and potentially bone. That would be my concern.
But would you want him in sort of maximal sort of vascular shape before you undertake this wound debridement, especially since it's nothing's pushing you to, you know, you don't have an abscess that needs to be drained urgently. Don't you want to sort of present, you know, prevent future sort of, you know, wound necrosis by, you know, maximizing the time at which you start the debridement?
Absolutely. It's a challenge to know which comes first, or do you work them up and potentially work simultaneously? It's probably the ideal scenario.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, do you get a little bit more anatomic information? Do you do a duplex? Do you do a vein mapping? I believe that you have to do all these things as you approach a case like this to take a decision, right? From the vascular surgery standpoint, you tell me, well, I mean, I have these curves. Okay, well, show me a duplex and give me a vein mapping, because all of those things have to be in your algorithm as you're moving forward. You just jumped ahead, and so I know you're going to give me an angiogram, but I kind of would like to have all that as I go into the angiogram, because my algorithm may change on the table if I know this guy's got a great saphenous vein and I'm going to see this horrible distal tibial disease. Potentially, I may not want to do a complex endo procedure. So I do you routinely duplex and vein map your patients before you go into the angiogram?
I know we routinely duplex. I don't know if we routinely vein map.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was the duplex showing?
I think it showed, yeah. You showed the monophasic DP and PT and a low toe pressure, I think, is what just some non-invasive.
But that's just an ABI, right?
Yeah, just an ABI.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't include them, but yes, they were done.
Hi, one question to the panel. From an infectious disease point of view, oftentimes we see these patients and we're consulted later. They're already on antibiotics. If you saw this patient early on in presentation, when would you start the antibiotics? And from the diabetic management, how much does the patient need to get under control in terms of total glucose right on admission and A1C? How aggressive are you going to be? And is it better to be aggressive before intervention or just move forward with the vascular intervention? Thank you.
So if I saw this patient, he's stable, he doesn't seem to have surrounding cellulitis, so I would not start antibiotics at this point. And then if there is going to be a plan for surgery, it would sort of depend what the findings were. So again, if this is a soft tissue infection and it all gets debrided, then I would not advocate for antibiotics. Most patients probably end up getting like a couple of days, but probably just whatever you get prophylactic surgically is fine. If there ends up being bone involvement, then I would start antibiotics after the surgery, and I would probably just pick something, you know, like we all do, and just wait to see what the cultures show before coming up with a final regimen. In terms of the hemoglobin A1C, I mean, I'm not an endocrinologist, but I will say I think I just go for it. You know, I feel like patients are where they are, and you do want to try and optimize it and get it better, but I wouldn't necessarily wait.
Sarah, can you go back to the slide? Miguel, I got a question for you. The waveform slide. You asked for a duplex scan. What would a duplex scan tell you that the initial non-invasives with the Doppler waveforms or toe pressure, TBI, would not? How would that change or alter your treatment plan?
You told me that she or he had a femoral popliteal intervention, and so I'm curious to see, it was just a plain old balloon angioplasty. Was there a dissection left behind? Was there anything anatomically that we could have now potentially pinpoint? I think you have a better understanding of the hemodynamics. And looking at this, if you tell me that there is a normal triphasic waveform of the popliteal, and this is what I have to work with below the knee, you know, I may just be inclined to do a first debridement and see what I have. I mean, I can get, we would in our institution probably spy this patient, see what the, time to peak is, what the ingress is, and take also a decision based a little bit on that first. I don't think that you need to, for a first-time debridement, you don't need to have perfect blood flow. I believe that the blood flow is going to be amazingly important as you progress. And as you get the information from your wound care podiatrist, a wound care specialist or podiatrist, saying, look, I opened it up, I cleaned it, there's no blood, I mean, it's not bleeding. And these guys can tell you. I mean, they know when they have a wound that's just dry like desert, and you know that you need to give it a little oomph in that segment.
Yeah, I look at this differently. So he's got no DP pulse. He's got a nearly flat toe waveform, and the wound's on the top of his foot. So I bet you he's got anterior tibial dorsalis pedis disease. He's got severe ischemia. This is dry. So if you unroof it, you're going to expose tendons. So you really don't know how deep that wound is until you debride it. So I would angiogram him and revascularize him first and then deal with the wound afterwards.
Would you sit on the eschar and let it kind of fly, or would you eventually roof it?
So we did an angiogram, and he had good inline flow.
Now you have to treat his aneurysm.
Yeah. Dysloscopy, popliteal, and then trifurcation. And then he has trickling PT down to the foot with the occlusion at the ankle. So our next question is, as far as
can you go back to
this one or keep going?
So that's just PT.
Yeah.
And then go back, and it's discontinuous. Yeah. AT's out, PT is in line except for at the ankle, and the perineal is sort of running out.
Yeah, I mean, can you obviously, here's where we usually just, we'll go back and forth and look at the images a few times before we decide. So show the, again, the lateral view of the foot. So very extensive disease, right? I mean, you have a occluded anterior tibial, occluded perineal, sucky-looking posterior tibial that occludes segmentally before the lateral plantar. And if you do believe in some of the stuff that I was talking earlier, you could see that there is obviously the woundosome is hypoperfused. It'd be interesting in a potentially a later, if you leave the pedal on, I kind of would have liked to see if that pedal loop loops back and there is some degree of dorsalis pedis reconstitution. But looking at that, if I had to do it on the table, I would probably advocate for going to the posterior tibial. I think you could connect. There may be a micro channel, and if you can connect the posterior tibial and angioplasty into the lateral plantar, then you can place a microcatheter into the lateral plantar and inject and see if it retrogradely then perfuses the dorsum of your foot. And if so, then you may be done without having to do extensive anterior tibial occlusions that we know may just have 3 months of patency at the best. And this is a complicated wound. I mean, I don't think this the having a good conduit may not be a bad idea in this case, and you can do a lateral plantar distal anastomosis. But I would start with an angioplasty of the distal posterior tibial, see what perfusion you get, and if you have a wound blush in from the loop backwards, then I'd call it a day and start working on the wound. What you guys do?
So we did pretty much what you're talking about. We did a balloon angioplasty at the PT where the occlusion was. So got pretty good runoff from that.
At what point did you?
Oh, sorry. We did a balloon angioplasty, the PT, where the occlusion was.
Was the wound debrided at the same time? Or
no. Okay, so the wound was not debrided at this time. We decided to watch the wound and see if it was to improve or not, just continue with local wound care.
And what happened?
Okay, so.
So one thing that, this is why I think that when you do all these kind of pedal loop cases to a certain extent, you have to keep an eye on all those collaterals emerging from the proximal lateral. You see how you now connected the dots, but now you lost the heel blush. And I think that's important. I think that we at least have to think about it. I don't know what the real impact may be of that, but I think that's where, you know, being a little bit more, having finesse in your wire skills and trying to come retrogradely, I know it's kind of crazy, but, you know, I showed you a couple cases. If you poke the plantar artery, you see how actually there is a micro channel going all the way up to the malleolus. Connecting then retrograde would allow you to then save all those branches. And I think it's important as you do more and more distal work that you really note what that distal skin perfusion may be. Now, this is just random thoughts, because I can see some dissected areas there, and I can tell you that angioplasty is probably not going to stay open for more than 3 months.
How would you know, though, that you would necessarily lose those collaterals just coming strictly from a retrograde approach? I mean,
how would you know? Because you would stay intraluminal. I mean, what happens here is you probably subadventitial and then came back in and then plasty the entire thing, but you don't have all the branches that you have. So I'm thinking that potentially you knocked out potentially some of those branches in your dissection path.
So he comes back for a post-op visit 1 month later. He continued with, I believe, wet-to-dry dressings at home, and this eschar starts to become wet, starts peeling from previously dry, stable eschar. His toe pressures have increased from 30 to 121 after intervention.
No way. Your toe pressure is now 121 just from that. I mean, that's like magic augmentation of toe pressure.
Do you have the images of the non-invasives at this visit? Yeah. I would love to see.
I know. I want to see this.
I think I do in later slides.
Okay.
So my question now is: should you know what's the timing of debridement? What are your thoughts on that? Or
sorry, I had the same question. So do you have some, besides the toe pressure, do you now have the ankle pressures or some duplex evidence that what you've done is patent? I mean, because presumably if what you did a month ago is still open and that would be, you know, indicated by this ginormous toe pressure, then I'm not sure. Okay, well, what more are you going to do then right now from a vascular standpoint? You're going to have to take care of this wound, I think. I mean, all evidence would point to that you've really maximized the perfusion of this foot.
Yeah, at this point, just debride it, VersaJet and see what you have under all that.
So we did debride it. It was down to tendon. And then we kind of started sort of thinking about what things we would do to cover it. So options that you guys would consider?
So
You know, first I might question the wet to dry, as you were, you know, for that first month. I would probably start prepping it a little bit better, even something like collagenase or something like that to hopefully get the contracture of the wound bed a little bit smaller, because it's obviously easier to deal with a smaller wound than a larger wound. But I think debridement and then some sort of coverage, whether it be negative pressure in conjunction with a skin substitute. Or skin substitutes, you know, are based on preference, but certainly I think that's where I would go. It was combination therapy. I like doing things in addition to, not instead of, not just choosing one modality, but hopefully you can use multi-modalities.
So he came back for his post-op visit. Again, this is the second month, so 2 months after the angioplasty and 1 month after the debridement, with new onset rest pain. After the debridement, we started Inlextra with him treatment. Every 2 to 3 days, he was changing the pads. And his toe pressures have basically gone down half from 121 to 62. So at this point, we're thinking, and the wound hasn't gotten significantly smaller. It looks better, but it hasn't gotten significantly smaller. And then going to his studies, again, gone from 122 to 62. At this point, would you go back and consider a repeat intervention? So I'll go back to this study here.
Show the foot again, if you may. It's a little fussy, but if that's
sorry,
a nice
this
granulation bed, you know, would anybody consider just skin grafting at this point?
So, yeah. But I guess our question was also, like, due to the decreased, you know, perfusion at 2 months out from the angioplasty, would you consider redoing?
Oh, well, I think that the principle ultimately is just, you know, you're seeing the patients, not the labs. So,
okay.
I mean, if I have, the guy looks good, he's fine, that the wound is contracting by 50%, and now you're granulated, at that point, I would probably ignore
the rest pain, just let him.
He has rest pain in the entire foot, or is this just associated to an open wound?
I believe it was the entire foot. Yeah, like he had difficulty sleeping. Kind of similar to what he had previously had.
I'll give him some Neurontin.
Yeah, so that's another question. Is it, you know, combined ischemic versus neuropathic? But so going forward here.
Let me ask, you know, also to everybody, do you see ischemic rest pain on diffuse tibial disease in diabetics? You know, a Rutherford class 4, that, you know, for me those are much more proximal and severely ischemic, you know, pale. I don't know. I mean, I'm asking.
I think you can get it, but I think the toe pressure would usually be lower.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the wound actually doesn't look that bad to me. It looks like it's granulating, and I might give it a little bit longer.
It's going to take a few more months, though. That was part of the thinking process.
Well, I mean, if you felt... if it's going downhill, I mean, it's clear.
The issue is restenosis rate's going to be high for this, right? So if you wait for the angioplasty to fail before you fix it, you may have a harder time resurrecting. So, but I would just wait. I believe in toe pressures, but I think they're really variable. So you can't just use a number from time to time. So it'll depend a little bit on the arc pressure. But the waveforms, like you had very monophasic, almost barely pulsatile waveforms to start with. They kind of look at what they're like now. You may find they're not that different from the last two. If they're a lot different, and I'm not ready to close my wound yet, I probably would go back and look.
Yeah, they're also saying you have a triphasic waveform in the anterior tibial artery, the origin. So much for that.
Do you have a question?
Yeah. Skin grafted or covered?
That's the next step.
Oh.
Yeah.
How long was the wound open now?
So I believe four months. Yeah. Well, 4 months since the initial wound, and I guess it's been open since debridement's 1 month.
Is there value to preserving the extensor tendons when it's not highly part of your functional ambulation? And why not skin graft sooner, I guess, is my question.
I think that's a great question. You know, our question is, do you save the tendons? I think if you can, you do. If it's going to really slow down the wound healing process, then I would probably sacrifice them, but understand that he'll be in a brace for the rest of his life. So again, talking about quality of life issues, you may need an AFO or something like that. But I think there's good, you know, good options for covering over tendon. I would certainly, even if you did a debridement and you exposed the tendons, there's nothing wrong with, again, doing some sort of Integra or other type of a graft, which, you know, has the indication to cover tendon. So I would try and save those tendons if I could.
You know, I think at this stage it just becomes a joint decision between your multidisciplinary team. You know, the vascular surgeon is talking to the podiatrist who's basically seeing this patient on a biweekly basis. And, you know, if he or she tells me that this wound was doing great, but over the last month it's really, you know, slowed down, we've made no progress, and there's definitely been a drop in the toe pressure, then I think it's worth it to do another angiogram and see what the status of that posterior tibial artery is.
So that's what we did. So this is the pre and post of the foot lateral view. And again, a balloon angioplasty was done with the restenosis of the PT, the ankle.
Didn't look that bad on the pre.
And then at the same time, we put a split thickness engraft on the thigh. And so this is 1 month post-op and then 3 months post-op. And then this was 4 months post-op, which was just actually a very recent picture here. So he's completely healed. He's ambulating. His functional status is pretty similar to baseline of what he was before. He had some other medical issues going on, but generally speaking.
So this is 4 months out of the angioplasty and his ischemia is zero. Is mm-hmm. that so?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't include that. But yeah, his toe pressures at now are around 90. 98, yeah.
What are you going to do if it occludes?
Nothing.
I don't think you have to do anything, you know?
Nothing.
I think that so if you've...
No rest pain now?
Well, it's probably the wound.
I think it was the wound, yeah. Exactly.
I mean, the area of the wound as well is right where the deep perineal nerve and superficial perineal nerve there, so... But, yeah.
It's going to be interesting that we will have tools soon, potentially, to increase the likelihood it'll stay open, right? I think that it's going to be interesting to see what comes out from drug-coated balloon technology and tibial interventions. I saw a wonderful talk a week ago by an Italian guy who did an analysis of all those studies. You know, they pulled the plug on the first drug-coated balloon study on tibial vessels, and they stopped it because there was an increased amputation. And he did an analysis. It was really interesting because he looked at the diameters of balloons used. And all of them are undersized. So all of the studies were done with 2.0 balloons, which in a tibial like that, you know, you can go all the way up to 3.5. This is distal, but it seems like really trying to break, creating much more luminal gain will then put you at a better road to having better patency and some effect of the drug.
The first one was a 2.5, and I believe the second one was a 3.0.
You used a 3.0?
Yeah, from what I read from the report, yeah.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.